Well, hi, everybody. Welcome to Bikescape, episode number 52, August 20th, 2006. Well, hi there, Bikescapers. It's another show. Just back from a long vacation. Good to be back. I won't go back to work until Monday, but I'm going to crank out this podcast tonight. It's the middle of the night, and I'm feeling a little ill, so my voice may not sound the way it usually does. But we're going to put out this show, because the show must go on. So it's another show about fixed-gear bikes. You may or may not have heard an earlier podcast that I did a while back about fixed gear bikes, and if you'd like to check out what a fixed gear bike is, take a listen to it. But basically, you know, I guess a fixed gear bike is a bike that, if you don't know what it is, it's a bike that doesn't coast. When you're pedaling, it's going, and when you stop, you cannot stop pedaling until the bike stops. It doesn't coast. You know, other bikes have a free wheel. On a fixed gear bike, the gear is actually fixed to the wheel. And although some people very often, especially when they're learning, and they'll put a brake on the front wheel, you don't really need to put a brake on the back wheel, because you can stop the back wheel with your legs by just putting reverse pressure on the forward motion of the wheels. When people are learning, they usually use a front brake. Some people who have been riding a long time use a front brake as well. But there is a certain breed of people that prefer not to have a brake. I happen to be one of them, although sometimes I wish I did have a brake when I'm at the top of a hill. I find myself walking down some very steep San Francisco hills now and then, especially when I'm riding with other people who do have brakes, and I often think, why don't I have a brake? But as we'll investigate in this podcast, there are reasons to ride without a brake, and it is very liberating in an interesting way. But of course, you know, things happen, and what we've been waiting to have happen for quite a while, those of us in the Fixie community have been waiting for this event, and it's finally happened. A police officer has pulled over a person riding a fixed gear bike with no brake. This time, it happened in Portland, Oregon, to a woman named Ayla Holland, who's doing her job. She was a messenger. She's a messenger in Portland, riding a fixed gear bike with no brake, and the officer pulled her over for the offense of not having a brake. Now, if we look at the law in Oregon, which is pretty much the same law that you'll have on any state in the United States, it's basically a uniform law. The law says a bicycle must be equipped with a brake that enables the operator to make the braked wheel skid on a dry, level, clean pavement. So you need to be able to skid the back tire, basically. You don't want to skid the front tire, obviously. So already the law is unclear, but it doesn't actually say anything about what the mechanism of a brake is. It just needs to be equipped with a brake. And what Ayla Holland and her attorney, Mark Ginsburg, tried to argue in Portland court was that Ayla's legs were the brake. Ayla's legs, in conjunction with the chain and the fixed gear and the tire and the bike, she was able to skid her wheel in just the way the spirit of the law says. The law actually says you need to be able to, as I said, brake the wheel make them skid on a dry, level, clean pavement. And she was able to do that, as most people who know how to ride without a brake should know how to do. If they can't do that, they really should have a brake. It was an interesting trial. Mark Ginsburg cross-examined Officer Barnum, who did the pullover. Yeah, he stopped Holland at First and Jefferson and told her that she was in violation of the law. She must put a front brake on her fixie to avoid a ticket. And Holland disagreed, and she said, and so they basically say that the law doesn't clearly define what the brake should be. So this, there was an interesting back and forth between lawyer Mark Ginsburg and Officer Barnum. Ginsburg said, when you approached the rider, did she stop? Officer Barnum, yes. Ginsburg, how did she stop the bike? Officer Barnum, I don't know. Ginsburg, the gear stopped the bike, didn't it? The gear itself stopped the bike. But the gear is not a brake. From the outset, the judge seemed to agree with the cop, and it was up to Ginsburg to change his mind. And so the trial began to hinge on the definition of a brake. So Ginsburg asked the cop, what is a brake? Officer Barnum, a lever, a caliper, a coaster brake hub? Ginsburg, can you show the court where in the vehicle code a brake is defined as such? Officer Barnum, no. Did you at any time during the traffic stop ask my client if she could skid, thus meeting the performance required in the statute? Officer Barnum, no. And at this point, the judge seemed like he wasn't swallowing this. And he basically said, I know what a brake is, and this is not a brake. A rose is a rose, is what he said. And Ginsburg, the judge asked the judge, would you like us to demonstrate that we can skid this bike to a stop on a dry, level pavement? Judge said, no, I know what a brake is. This is not a brake. And Ginsburg argued with the judge. He pulled out a Webster's dictionary and opened it to the word brake. The definition of a brake, according to Webster's, is a device to arrest the motion of a vehicle. It did not stipulate anything about a distinct lever or a caliper or anything else that people think of as a brake in lay circles. So in his last comments, he said that the current statute is not well written, and it seems really frightening, he thought, to require only a front brake. So both sides rested the case, and the judge gave his opinion. He said that gearing itself and or leg muscles are not a sufficient source of braking power. He said the brake must be a separate device from the musculature of the rider. Take me, for instance. I don't have leg muscles as strong as a messenger. How would I stop safely? Then he turned directly to Ginsburg and he said, if your client had a stick he could rub against the tire, you'd have a case. I don't believe the defense has convinced me to broaden the definition of a brake, so I find the defendant guilty. So now Holland has 30 days to either put on a brake or pay the $73 fine or appeal the decision. And I understand she's going to appeal the decision. So that's the case in a nutshell. It's been kind of interesting to watch. And let's see, what do I have now for you? I guess we'll go to an older interview I did a while back when I was having people describe their bikes at the opening of Critical Mass. So you may have heard this interview before, but it has a really good description of what a fixed gear bike is and what it feels like to ride it and why a person would choose to ride a fixed gear bike with no brakes. So here we go. This guy's name is Dave.
What kind of bike is that?
It's a put together conversion fixed gear bike. 1980s Falcon of England frame with some deep V velocity rims that happen to be white, with some Suzy Pro Mat hubs, a medium grade Shimano bottom bracket, Shimano 600 cranks. The pedals are a mystery to me. I don't know what they are, actually.
I don't either.
They're nice.
They work.
I'm riding my fixed gear at a 48.17.
Okay, you guys can do the math, figure out the gear inches. I don't know what that is.
That's
48.15, that's pretty steep.
I don't want to, make myself look stupid. Anyhow, yeah.
Why do you like it?
Why do I like my bicycle? Because it gets me around. I get VIP parking wherever I go. It's a nice exercise. My bike's pretty sexy looking.
It is. It's very pretty.
And it's the main thing about the fixed gear is to get the cadence down. I'm going to be doing some long rides in the summertime, so I really want to get my cadence. And I figure if I ride over the bridge, I'm actually riding twice as far as the next person riding a 10 speed because there's a lot of coasting time and I'm continuously pedaling.
Right, so you work hard going down the hill, too.
Yes, I do, and it's almost like zen for me because riding the fixed gear, it's like the bike's really, you're really one with the bike. You talk to professional skaters, they're like, their skateboard becomes their feet, their feet become the skateboard. It's the same difference.
And yeah.
Riding without a brake, too, is a different ride. It forces you to pay attention. It's not for aesthetics, and it's not to be the cool guy on the street. You know, it's just a different ride, you know?
And you sort of find yourself, like, learning to shoot the tube every now and then, like a surfer, I guess. See a situation, I mean, you're sort of thinking escape routes all the time.
Yeah, exactly.
It's kind of an interesting way to think about riding.
It's a fun ride, you know? And I've noticed, like, with my reaction time with the brake, opposed to just, like, my feet, I think I'm a little bit quicker with my feet. You know, then just reacting to it, you know, and I'm not like sitting around like looking like seeing what's to the side of me. I'm like in this like euphoric state where I'm like calculating every move and knowing what cars are going to do. And one day maybe I'll have an accident, you know, it's bound to happen in San Francisco, but so what?
Yeah, probably won't get her. As long as you don't hit your head too hard.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks.
No problem, man.
Yeah. So a euphoric state. A heightened state of awareness, a oneness with the bike, with the road. These are the ways people always describe riding a fixie with no brakes. But can you stop? Can you actually stop as well as you can with a brake? And that's the question that needs to be answered for this appeal, I guess. So there is a lawyer out there working on this. He's going to there are actually films you can see out there on YouTube and Google Video. That show people in skidding contests and people stopping on. And actually, there is a something on YouTube. Check the blog at bikescape.blogspot.com, and you'll see the links to these movies of people stopping very easily on fixed gear bikes. So the person who's handling some of this work to help with the appeal is a lawyer. His name is Ray Thomas, and I got an interview with him over the telephone. He's up in Oregon, in Portland, handling the case. He's also making a film about how fixies stop. And, well, why don't we let him speak for himself?
Okay, well, good morning.
Good morning. We're on the air now, I guess. So
we're
talking to Ray Thomas over the Skype and the telephone to a shopping center parking lot. And hi, Ray. So what's your connection with this case, on the fixie case?
Well, my connection is that I'm a bicycle organizer and community nag. Uh-huh. And what I do is I work with the law as a legal activist, and one of the things that has gotten sideways for people who ride fixed bikes is that the law doesn't really take those, even though they're the most like primary form of bicycling, and in fact we all hearken from them, the law doesn't really kind of understand how that machine works, because really what has happened is that the laws were created by people who were working from the mentality of coaster brake bikes. So what happens is that frequently the laws specifically relating to brakes tend to kind of break down and get goofy when it comes to fixed bikes. So what I'm doing is really not as a pioneer, but just as somebody in the community that's throwing just a little resources at it, because I don't think it's the biggest question in the bike community that we have. In fact, it's really kind of a little one. But it's to demonstrate that the laws that require that a bike have a brake that makes a wheel skid don't really make a whole lot of sense for a number of reasons, but one of them is that a fixed bike is perfectly capable of satisfying the performance requirements of that law, and the entire drivetrain is the brake. And, you know, to think of a fixed bike as having a different kind of brake than a coaster brake is really silly, because they're functionally the equivalent.
Right. So what exactly is the case? Someone was pulled over on the road in Portland?
Well, it's more than that. It's that we have several police officers who have come to believe that fixed bikes and those who ride them are sort of a hazard, and that the answer for it is to make these people get brakes. The problem is that the idea that they have, which is to force people who ride fixed to get brakes for their own health and safety, doesn't make any sense, because the brake, to the extent a brake needs to be added to a fixed, it's a front brake, not a rear brake.
Right.
And if you add a front brake to a fixed bike, it doesn't make the bike satisfy the law any more than a fixed using the biker's legs to stop the rear tire.
So yeah, maybe we should step back. And what is exactly the law? The law said Go ahead.
It says that a bike has to have a brake that is sufficient to make the wheel skid on flat level level dry pavement. Okay.
Sounds reasonable enough.
It sounds reasonable, but the thing is that really, as you know, probably you're a bike guy, right?
Oh yeah.
The front tire puts up like 65-70% of the braking power. Uh-huh. And if you ever were on pavement to try to make the front brake skid, wow, or the front tire skid, you will go over the handlebars.
That's
it's
right.
Impossible.
Yeah.
I don't care who you are. And, I mean, it's easier to do a wheelie on the front than it is to make the front wheel skid. So what they're trying to get people to do to comply with the law does not make this thing comply with the law anymore at all. And what it says is that it has to have a brake that makes the wheel skid. Well, the fact is that, as you know, a fixed gear, all you got to do is learn how to brake it, and you make the rear skid. So what I've offered to do, even though I haven't taken one of these cases to court yet because I really don't want to take the time with it, I did offer to make a movie, and the movie would show a low tire pressure, high friction rear tire on a fixed performing better than a coaster brake, skinny hard rubber tire,
right,
on a coaster brake bike, just to show that the performance difference is not, you know, I mean, it's just the same thing. And then also, without anybody getting hurt, I'd like to have, you know, show somebody how that brake thing, that addition is kind of goofy. But I have to say, if I was to be in front of the legislature, that I think that having a fixed without a front brake is not a very good idea, because having any bike without a front brake is not a very good idea, because that's where most of your braking potential is. You know? So to me, this is not a matter of like major civil liberties, but it's just one more way that I think that when the state gets, you know, is granted the power to enforce the law, what you find is that the people that the law gets enforced against are the people who look different or act different, right?
Right, that's what it comes down to.
Part of it, there's where the civil liberties part of this is. It's like, you know, you got some police officer who doesn't live in Portland, like lives in some, you know, rural community up in Washington State, kind of doesn't really be somebody who would ever choose to live in their district, right?
Uh-huh. And you know, they generally don't ride bicycles either.
They don't ride bikes. They think bikes are a pain in the ass, uh-huh, you know? And you know, it's just like, it's like the way sometimes people in the emergency room look at people who engage in high-risk activities. Like, those people are doing something that is somehow not, you know, properly respectable enough to get the benefit of the same laws that apply to everybody else, because sometimes somebody gets hurt doing it. So to me, it's one of those things where it's ripe for abuse, and it is abused, and we're going to do something about it. I suppose if somebody was to really think about it, you could come up with a law that would be a better law.
Right. Well, a law that was written by someone who actually knew what it was to ride a bicycle, that might help. You know, I think his laws are not written by bicyclists, generally speaking. So the law actually doesn't describe what the brake is, the mechanism itself. It just says the bike needs to be equipped with a brake. Yeah.
Right, and if you look on our website, in the Pedal Power book, there's a section, table of contents on like the second page or something, and there's a section in the Oregon law called Bicycle Equipment, and it just kind of lists the requirements for lighting and things like that.
Right.
And that's where that brake system thing is. And it's silly because, you know, the people who ride the fixed bikes are the best riders in the city.
Yeah.
You know, you've got the highest quality riding skill group being picked upon for something totally goofy.
And speaking of picking upon,
it's a massive waste of resources.
So you find that there's a lot of instances of police picking on bicyclists in Portland. Not just is it just to the messenger community, or maybe to people who ride fixies, or commuters in general, or just anybody who rides a bike. Is that what's happening there?
What I'd say is that when you see the way that the cops do prosecute, it tends to be toward that community.
Uh-huh.
So it's like there's plenty of things that need to be prosecuted, like failing to yield to bicyclists in bike lanes,
uh-huh.
failing to yield to pedestrians in crosswalks.
Mm-hmm.
That should you know that should take the police resources, right?
Right. So what's going to happen to this? I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah, you know, it's not this case.
Yeah.
I told you it's not a case. It's that there's a cop here or two who are deciding that they're going to start citing people. So there's like 5 cases, 10 cases.
Uh-huh. Is anybody appealing any of these cases?
Well, there was one trial, and unfortunately, the judge decided that even though the bicyclist was being represented by a very capable lawyer,
uh-huh.
who was a bike racer himself,
really,
that it wasn't the definition of brake that was making it so that this was a problem. What the judge decided was that unless you have a mechanism that's a brake specifically, as opposed to the entire drivetrain, you just can't qualify. So it doesn't have anything to do with performance.
Right. I think he said if you had a stick, I would have found you not guilty. You had a stick to stop the tire.
Yeah. But the stick would have had to have. That's what's so funny. The stick would have had to do what the law requires, and the stick couldn't.
Right.
Unless the stick would have somehow locked the tire up.
Yeah, stick it in the spokes, maybe.
You could put a stick in the wheel. You could put a stick in the wheels,
right.
in between the spokes. And if it would stop the bike, even though it broke all the spokes out, like 5 spokes before it finally stopped, it'd comply with the law.
Right. So a lot of people would say, this is a rhetorical question, a lot of people would say, why doesn't he just get a brake? $20, put a brake on it.
Well, that's because the thing is that you look at these bikes at a velodrome, right?
Uh-huh.
Well, the fixed movement has to do with aesthetics. And that is, you don't put anything on the bike. It's like the purity of the bike. You don't stick something on there. Like that, like a brake.
Right.
The bike is, you know, like this statuesque thing that is perfect in its complete simplicity. And so the law is stupid. And the thing is that now you're getting into aesthetics and artistic freedom. And at that point, you can abandon all hope of making a whole lot of sense, in my opinion.
All right. Well,
so that's why I'm not. That's why I've not dedicated my life to this question, because to me, I see all the points, and I'm just amazed that the cop would even screw with this, because there's just so many more things that, you know, need to be done than this. But this is the way that sometimes these things happen, and I do think that it's a fertile ground, because the law is silly, and. You and I could go to coffee together right now, I'll bet you, and we could write a better law. And if we wanted to take the time to screw around with it, we could probably get it somehow introduced to the House. I mean, I've done stuff like that in the Oregon legislature and had it work.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, maybe I'll deal with this a little bit, but the thing
there
is...
There are other battles to fight, yes.
Well, there are. I mean, you know, people getting killed by motorists that are not, like, recognizing that they have a space... on the road, that's a legitimate space on the road. Now that's the sort of thing that gets me going.
Yeah.
Not stuff like this.
Right. Speaking of...
this is important. I mean, it's important, but it made it to the Wall Street Journal.
It's just indicative of the state of mind of the people that write the laws, I think. And speaking of
exactly,
yeah, and that's what the attention needs to be brought down on. I'm wondering how a Critical Mass is doing in Portland. Do you ever write in that, or do you ever have any experience in the?
Well, Critical Mass is got about five cities where it's pretty strong, and Portland's one of them. Mm-hmm. And it's got a. I wouldn't necessarily say that it's connected with the fixed movement, but it is probably, kind of a lot of the same folks do that ride. Mm-hmm. And I think that in the police mind, those folks who are kind of enforcing this law, I think that they kind of fail to distinguish the two. The political winds change frequently here. And what that means is that... we have a police chief now who has a more tolerant view toward critical mass than our last chief. Uh-huh. And we have a mayor who's got a very tolerant view toward critical mass. In fact, our mayor actually rode with critical mass. Uh-huh. So only the most blatant traffic violations get prosecuted. But the police officers who are assigned to critical mass to accompany them, mm-hmm. for those police officers, they don't particularly like doing it. Yeah. Now, some of them are pretty good about it. They put some of the bicycle cops with the critical mass, and some of them are pretty tolerant, and they're cool.
Yeah.
They've got to deal with the fact that critical mass is subject to citizen calls, and to the extent that people think that bicyclists are being kind of coddled by the cops, and there's a lot of that here, see, because Portland's such a big bike city, right?
Uh-huh.
So there's a lot of times that, people who are members of the car driving public feel that the bicyclists have just gotten out of hand here. Mm. You know what I mean?
Because there's so many of them, or because they're scoff laws, or... Or what?
Oh, it's because Portland's such a big popular bike city that they feel like the bicyclists have kind of taken over.
Yeah.
And that it's not a place where, you can even drive anymore without some bike rider giving you the finger for something that you supposedly did wrong. You don't even know what you did wrong. Here's some kid with tattoos and piercings screaming at you, Yeah.
Well, we have an injunction here in San Francisco. Our entire bike plan is on hold while there's under an injunction now because someone has sued to stop all bike planning for the next who knows how many years. But because he believes that the bicyclists are being coddled, I guess, or that there's so few of them that they shouldn't have so many rights.
Well, that's exactly what we're talking about.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you very much, and I really appreciate you giving us your time.
Sounds good. Let me know if there's anything I can do.
Okay, great. Yeah, I'll send you an email when it goes up.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye, thanks.
Song's called No Breaks by The Rise. I guess that's the musical equivalent of riding a fixed gear bike with no brakes. So you may be wondering why I'm doing this show. Sometimes I wonder too, but I think what it touches with me, this whole case, is the fact that there are people out there that don't understand what's going on, and they would like to put an injunction on bike plans in places like San Francisco or stop critical mass in places like New York, and it's happening all over the country and around the world, and really. I really don't know how to deal with it, but I think we need to fight for our rights on this in these situations. And it doesn't mean that I think that people shouldn't ride without brakes. And that's a separate issue altogether, whether or not it should be legal. I definitely wholeheartedly endorse the use of brakes on fixed gear bikes, especially when you feel you need one. And those of you who know you need one, you know who you are, because you can't stop unless you learn how to stop without a brake. And it took me a year, year and a half of riding with a brake before I got a new bike and neglected to put a new one on. And as I said before, there are times when I wish I had one, and I may one day have a brake, just as a kind of an oh shit lever, as a friend of mine calls it. So that's fixed gear bikes, that's the brake issue, and that's why I'm covering it.
It's a new dance. Catch the new dance.
Come on, a brand new dance.
It's a new dance.
Festival
crew. Come bust the new
dance. Hear this. Me have a new dance and it's simple. Me have a new dance in a gospel, yo. Catch the new dance, follow me people. Bust the new dance in a gospel, yo. Bicycle, just sit down and pedal. Circle down in a the race when I need no petrol. Bicycle, everybody roping, everybody riding. Make a create a scene. Bicycle.
Okay, well, let's get to the news, and there is quite a bit of it. Well, New York. I did mention New York's critical mass. You know, from time to time, Bikescape focuses on critical mass in New York, and they're still having trouble trying to keep that mass going. The police, as you may know, have tried to stop it in the past by arresting everybody inside or by threatening people. By suing the environmental group Time's Up, who doesn't actually organize the mass, but they do advertise critical mass on their website. They were sued by the city for promoting what they called an illegal assembly. Several court cases have come down on the side of the bicyclists and the critical mass riders. It's now legal to ride. The law has been interpreted to be that it is now legal to ride more than two abreast on the street, and you can ride in a large group without a parade permit. So the police have been kind of stymied, and they're a little frustrated. They still want to stop critical mass for whatever reason. I'm not quite sure. A lot of it has to do with 9/11 and just heightened security and just the rise of the police state, in my opinion. But the police are still picking people off on the ride, and they're trying to ticket them, and they'll pull them over, and they'll start writing the ticket, and then they fumble when they try to come up with a charge, because there really isn't any. The rides are totally legal. And so what they're trying to do now is they're petitioning the city to change the law. According to Democracy Now!, the NYPD proposes new rules to curtail protests in New York. The police department has proposed a new series of regulations that would criminalize a lot of protests in the city that are now legal. The NYPD wants the city to require that police permits be required for any gathering of 35 or more people in the city streets. Currently, groups can hold relatively small protests, such as picket lines or vigils, without a permit, as long as there's no sound system. In addition, the NYPD wants to make it illegal for bikers to ride in groups of more than 20 people without a police permit. That's the law that was just struck down by the courts, but now due to the fact that there was no such law. Also, the police want the power to arrest any group of two or more pedestrians or cyclists who violate any traffic law, rule, or regulation. So, you know, you miss a stop sign, you roll through a stop sign slowly. If there's two of you, you can actually go to jail for it. Under the proposed rules, the police could arrest a couple for parading without a permit if they jaywalked. A public hearing has been scheduled for August 23rd. And Time's Up, the environmental action group that does a lot of these direct actions and environmental education in New York, is asking people to take action against this proposed rule. So some of the actions you can take, according to Time's Up, are to testify at the August 23rd public hearing and attend the rally outside Police Plaza in opposition to the changes. Send notice of your intent to testify to Assistant Deputy Commissioner Thomas P. Dupfner, New York City Police Department, 1 Police Plaza, room 1406, New York City, New York, 10038. Another thing you can do is you can attend a People's Public Forum on the proposed rule change. That's Thursday, August 17th. Oh, that's already happened, but that happened at St. Mark's Church. Also, you can, if you're involved with any affected groups, you can tell them about the proposed changes. It doesn't have to be bicycle groups. I mean, this affects everybody. It affects everybody, people. Urging them to attend the August 23rd hearing. Write to Mayor Bloomberg and ask him to withdraw the proposed rule. His address is City Hall, New York, New York, 10007. He's got a fax number. It's 212-788-2460. And his email is, well, you can get to his email by going to www.nyc.gov.html/mail/html/mayor.html. So I know you didn't hear that, but look on the website, bikescape.blogspot.com, and I will have a link to that, I promise. Number five, you can urge your council member to testify against the rule in the public hearing and at the People's Public Forum. And number six, pass along this information, because this needs to get out to a lot of different people. But hey, it's not all bad in New York. There are things happening that are good. Let's look and see what we have. The History, Mystery, Murder, and Money Tour, Saturday, August 26th at 10 p.m. They do things late in New York. Manhattan entrance to the Brooklyn Bridge, southwest corner of Chambers and Central Street. Central Street Park over by Park Row. What did they say about this ride? Join us for this dazzling and notorious bicycle tour of Lower Manhattan that includes New York's legendary Five Points, scene of Scorsese's movie The Gangs of New York. It also includes the world's largest gold vault, and arguably the single most important place in our nation's history, is what they say. Stop to look at these sites and old photographs. And they got the Riverside Ride August 27th at 10 p.m., Columbus Circle entrance to Central Park, 59th and CPW. And I'll stop for New York there. In San Francisco, well, there's Volunteer Night, Wednesday, September 13th. Go there and stuff some envelopes at the SFBC, the San Francisco Bicycle Coalition headquarters, 995 Market Street, Suite 1550, up on the 15th floor. And, here's something. We're going to go off on a tangent now. Patricia Walker passed away a couple of weeks ago. When was that? June 6th, almost a month ago. And more than a month ago. And she was one of the great forces in, along with Robin Levitt, the two of them single-handedly worked together to... Can you single-handedly work together? Well, that's what they did. They brought down the Central Freeway. They were part of the ongoing freeway revolt here in San Francisco. And it's a tradition to be anti-freeway in this town. There have always been forces trying to build or maintain freeways. And these two people managed to bring down the Central Freeway, a big, ugly double-decker freeway that just scarred through a neighborhood. And they replaced it with the pretty nice... bicycle friendly, I would have to say, Octavia Boulevard. And at the end of Octavia Boulevard, it ends in this brand new park, and that's where the memorial for Patricia Walkup will be. I believe they're changing the name of the park to Patricia Walkup Park. It's called Hayes Green. I think it's going to be called Patricia Walkup Green. So that memorial service at the park, when the name change will happen, is going to be on Sunday, September 10th. At 11 a.m. at the park at Hayes and Octavia. She was a great community leader, and she was best known for her work to bring down the freeway. And the memorial will include music and refreshments. And if you have any questions or would like to help with the celebration, please contact Robin Levitt at 863-5302. That would be a good thing to do. And also, another sad news, since we're talking about Patricia. Sue Bierman, former supervisor here in San Francisco, sort of the equivalent of a city council member, passed away a few weeks ago. She was part of an earlier... she was supervisor in 1991 for about 4, maybe it was 8 years, I can't remember. But she goes back a ways. She was instrumental in the freeway revolt in the 60s. And she was one of the main people that managed to stop the freeways from encroaching all over the city. When the Embarcadero freeway went up, the big double-decker freeway that came down in 1989 went up, people realized what they were in for, and they started fighting against other freeways that were being built. For instance, there was going to be a freeway going down Polk Street. Polk Street was going to have a double-decker freeway. 19th Avenue was going to have a huge freeway. And the Panhandle, where the night ride is going to meet, we'll get to that later, the night ride meets every last Sunday of every month at the statue there in the Panhandle at Baker Street. That was going to be a big trench in the ground. The Panhandle where people throw frisbees, there's 100 different varieties of trees. Sue Bierman, at the time of when this was up for a vote, the Board of Supervisors was going to vote for or against putting in what was to be called the Panhandle Freeway. The vote was counted to be 6-5 in favor of the freeway. There was one swing vote that Sue and her husband were able to pick out. They called Jack Morrison, and Sue got him to stand, Supervisor Morrison, to sit on a bench with her in the Panhandle. And Sue pointed out the trees, you know, the 100 different varieties of trees in the Panhandle, the people throwing balls, people walking dogs. There was a guy painting a painting. And Jack Morrison said, that's not an artist. That's just a hippie scribbling. But they argued for a little while. And then they sat quietly for, according to Sue, about 20 minutes without saying a word. Suddenly, Jack stood up and said, I guess I'll change my vote. And at that moment, the Central Freeway, Panhandle Freeway was killed. And the freeway revolt took a turn for the better. So, thanks to Sue Bierman, you and I get to ride our bikes through the Panhandle. People get to walk their dogs, and it's just a beautiful place. It continues to be a beautiful place, and so we have to thank Sue for that, and she's going to be sorely missed in this town. She was a great person. There were many times when I disagreed with her about political things. Had a little bit of a run-in with her in 1997 over critical mass, but even when you disagreed with Sue, you had to like her. She was just a wonderful person. Everybody loved her, and she'll be missed. So, goodbye, Sue. So, with that sad news, I guess I'll end the Bikescape for this episode, and I'll be back a little soon. We'll be back a little more often, hopefully, in the next few months. So, everybody. Wait, before I get to my standard ending, I just want to say also, if you have anything you would like to say, write to me at Bikescape. Well, you can go to bikescape.blogspot.com to look at the web version of this show and check out all the links and show notes. Or you can write to me at bikescape@sbcglobal.net and let me know what you think of the show. You can leave comments on the blog. You can leave reviews at the iTunes site. There are plenty of things you can do. Oh, and also, someone wrote to me, and I'll just do this. You know, we don't do commercials here on Bikescape, but this is a free commercial for t-shirts. This guy, Mark, wrote to me, and he said, I'm just going to throw this out there. And he's a dedicated, only way I transport myself cyclist, he says. And he has these t-shirts that say, bicycles are for lovers. So support Mark. You can write to him at mark@b-designs.com, or you can look at his site, www.b-designs.com, and take a look at his shirts and buy a t-shirt. Bicycles are for lovers. So with that, we end the show, and I really appreciate you all listening, and keep your head down, take the lane, and ride it like you stole it. Bye now.
They built a silver streamlined superhighway, 1,000 miles of concrete and steel. They promised us we'd go farther, faster. On the road to the American dream. But after 30 years at 60 miles an hour, you'd think we'd have heart of the country. We're moving too fast to turn around. But in Tulane, America, the life rolls on just like it did back when. Tulane, America, let Tulane, America take you home again. You can still buy a milkshake at the drugstore from the man who owned it before you were born. You'll find the local banker doing business with a handshake, nothing more. You're in Tulane, America, where a good life rolls on just like it did back. Tulane, America, let Tulane, America take you home. Tulane, America, good life rolls on just like it did back when. Thank you.